Welcome to Urban Tales, a podcast that delves into the minds of young entrepreneurs that have moved to New York City in search of professional development, and maybe even some personal development too. With me, your host, Maya Sargent.
Once you know what you want to do, what you need to do becomes revealed.
Today, I am joined by Adam Alpert, co-founder of Pangea.app. Pangea is a platform used to unite employers with young freelancers and recent grads to facilitate the job search for remote workers. Since their launch, Pangea have been connecting with various organizations to develop the app, recently receiving investments totaling $2 million to develop their app. And as we enter a new working world, which moves away from the traditional 9-to-5 structure and sees people working all hours of the day, sometimes in several different fields, Pangea speaks to this market. Today, Adam and I will dive into his experience as a co-founder of an app, how he navigates this competitive digital industry, and how New York City has played a part in his journey. Adam, welcome to Urban Tales.
So glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
I guess let's just dive right in by giving me kind of a brief overview about how Pangea came to be, where you saw that gap in the market, and how it's kind of developed from there.
The inspiration for Pangea really came from trying to help people unlock their passions. I was very fortunate that at a young age, I discovered mine. When I was in sixth grade, my parents gave me a video camera for my birthday party. And I had always had a hard time focusing very long on any one thing. And I had a hard time learning as a result. I was diagnosed with ADHD around the same time. But this video camera unlocked something in me, this kind of hyper-focus that I didn't know I had. And all through middle school and high school and into college, it became a really defining factor of my identity. When I found myself in college trying to figure out like my place in the world and taking some internships in a couple different industries that were interesting but weren't that interesting really to me, I came back to wanting to do more of what I loved. And for me, that was video, working on cool projects with cool people. And that was where I started seeing this incredible opportunity through freelancing to basically enable people to do more of what they love.
Do you think that a large inspiration for the app was that you are a creative yourself?
Oh, it was totally selfish. I wanted to build something that I would use.
Absolutely.
I was looking for projects, and I was looking to use my skill set as a videographer and video editor to meet new people and build new relationships, and kind of the initial version of the product we built really represented that. And it was more hyper-social at the beginning. It was more college students freelancing with like other college students. I mean, that was the world that we knew. It was totally selfish because I just wanted to make films, right? Like, and I was trying to figure out how I could develop professionally, do work that gave me purpose, and do stuff that aligned with my passions.
So how do you go about developing an app? You have this idea, you have something that you want. How do you get there?
You have to be a bit naive, I think, to get started.
Explain that.
I had this realization. I was sitting in my dorm room at the time. I went to Brown, Providence, Rhode Island. It was kind of like the middle of winter. And we had been like kind of talking about the space and kind of like, wouldn't it be great if people could kind of start their own businesses and yada, yada, yada. And I looked around my dorm room and I dawned upon me that every single thing in my space had once been an idea. And the naive thought was like, well, if Mark Zuckerberg could build Facebook in a dorm room, why can't we build an app? Why can't we do it? You know, once we figured out that we wanted to build something, I'm not saying this is the way that you should do it, but once we figured out like we want to accomplish X, once you know what you want to do, what you need to do becomes revealed. The early steps of starting anything is you have a vision in its entirety seems impossible, but like any problem set, you start breaking it into its components and you start just creating a checklist. And that's how you develop kind of like a roadmap to just getting started on anything in life. That's what we started doing. I think before we started building, we did a little bit of market research as well to see if other folks on college kind of would want something like this. And I don't think we did this the right way, but what I did was I created a survey with 10 questions, and I printed out like 150 copies of these things and got two clipboards, and I stood outside the Brown University cafeteria for about 3 hours, and I just went up to every single person who walked out who did not want to talk to me, and I just asked them if they had 30 seconds to fill out this survey. And that was kind of what we started first.
Yeah. And do you think a large reason why the app has become so successful is because of that clear mission and like kind of those clear foundations on where you wanted to go?
Most things in life take longer than you expect them to. And building a startup is incredibly hard to do. And because it takes so long and because it's so hard, it's so easy to give up. And if you don't care really deeply around what you're building and the people you're building it for and why you feel it needs to exist in the world, you're going to give up and it's not going to work. So I think part of the reason we've been successful to any extent is because we've stayed alive long enough and have refused to give up. And the reason is that we care so deeply about the people that we serve and solving problems for them and are really excited again by like what freelancing can do. What we've been getting better at doing is just going back and doing more continuous market research. We've gotten better at asking questions, not leading questions, understanding behaviors, understanding drivers, not giving people 10 questions and asking them to validate how we feel, but trying to really understand what drives them and the ability to really empathize with their users because we genuinely really care. Mm. And I think that's what's gotten us to this point.
So you were saying obviously the foundations of your business are in Rhode Island. How did that environment, do you think, either help or hinder your development? Because it's not in New York City. It was in, like you say, in a college. How did that help being so close in proximity to the people you were trying to reach?
That was a really big driver for it, frankly, was Rhode Island is like a college town. The entire city state of Rhode Island is a college town. So for us, especially in the early days, just being really close to our users was really key. Like just like I did market research, when we finally had the app launched, what I would do is I would go down the hill to like RISD, set up a little table and offer little rubber duckies to students who downloaded our app, right? And just being so close to our users and being able to go out there and just collect them.
We were talking before and you were saying that you're in the process of this relocation to the city. Why, what was the inspiration for that? And why do you think that this development was needed to kind of help your company expand?
Our company has kind of always done the opposite thing of everyone else in terms of like our working structure. So during the pandemic, when everyone else went remote, we actually like all moved into a house together in Providence. So we turned our dining room into our office. So we had like IKEA standing desks and all the monitors. And
fantastic.
You would just wake up in the morning, shower, come down the stairs, and you'd be like in the startup. We've now made the decision to work remotely as a team. Because as we've hired, we've been hiring more folks who don't live in Rhode Island. And we've been hiring folks that are freelancers or part-time or full-time contractors, and they want to live in other places. And as we've made that shift, I got myself a WeWork pass in the city. And, you know, I'm born and raised in Westchester County, which is just north of the city. I just started coming down to spend more time with my family, just WeWorking. And I realized that I could be incredibly productive within that environment.
I was also just going to add that for any listeners that are maybe outside of the city or who aren't sure what WeWork spaces are, they're basically collaborating co-working spaces, right, where you can hire desks for your company to collaborate and create, but you share the space with other companies and other brands as well.
For me, it was awesome. And I just started meeting all these incredible people. And I realized that just maybe we got to a point where just talking more with users was actually really helpful for us. And just maybe being locked away in a room in Providence maybe wasn't the best environment to be learning as quickly as we could. As we've shifted beyond just being a college-focused platform and really trying to think about the other half of the platform, which are the companies and which are predominantly tech startups, wanting to be really close as possible to them, just like in the early days when I was handing out rubber duckies. All this week, I was handing out business cards at events in New York City and basically pitching some ideas that we're having or doing informal market research and user interviews on the fly.
Yeah.
And I've just talked to everyone who's in Rhode Island already. So
you'll see maximize Rhode Island. Do you think post-pandemic now that kind of on the floor, engaging face-to-face with the employers as much as the freelancers that you're helping, like, has really helped?
I think it's helping. And I think that, again, the other thing that changed with the pandemic was just like the prevalence of video calls. But I've been meeting people in person and building a relationship. And then I have a little QR code on my phone that I have them scan, which takes them to like a little form with collects their name and their email. So I'm able to follow up with them. And I've been doing these events, not only in New York, but like in SF. And where I'm able to really understand them and kind of just what they're working on and what their challenges are. And the in-person element of that initial connection, though, I think really and results in me getting so much more information. They feel a lot more comfortable talking with me. As we've entered a stage where we've entered a new normal and there's a certain level of comfort and people are going out and doing things again, it's led to all these incredible environments. And I really want to be in those spaces and be as close as possible to the people we're trying to serve.
And I think especially if you're a creative, it gives you an opportunity to try different things, but also choose how you want to spend your time by engaging with projects you really, really love.
Well, I think that how we think about work is changing, and the role that work plays in our lives is also changing, and the way that our parents maybe went about their careers isn't necessarily the way that our generation is looking to build theirs. We're just a much more fluid, flexible generation, and we're open to all types of different types of opportunities, and freelancing or, you know, 1099 contracts just create a whole different way of building relationships with people that might have traditionally been your employers, but are now basically your clients. It isn't just knowledge workers or passion workers. It's people who work kind of like as your general contractors. It's people who work in the trades. It's people who are almost self-employed and have sole proprietorship and are running a business of one. It's a really incredible trend watching the increase in 1099, which is what you file if you're an independent contractor. I think it's indicative of a generational change. And I think that there are some other trends that are really driving and leading that change now, especially in the wake of the pandemic, where really the move towards remote work and flexible work and doing things more part-time and having more kind of flexible arrangements really started becoming more the norm.
It did really change working habits completely. Have you seen that reflected in the app? Has that demand increased?
Absolutely. I mean, we were doing so little before the pandemic, and it was like a tidal wave during the shift. I think things are balancing out a little bit now, but we're still super early. And I think that certain things will kind of fluctuate back to kind of a new normal. Like, not every job will that was remote during the pandemic will stay remote. But I think that a lot of workers and people have become a lot more comfortable and excited by the promise of remote work. And a lot of companies too have figured out how remote teammates kind of fit into their equation. And that's not going to change, right? That there's been a seismic like epoch that we've crossed in the last 2 years of things will never go back totally to where they were before the pandemic. And that's also like led to a whole like stigma, like a reduction of stigma around freelancing and remote workers. This entire generation, like for the rest of our lives, will not forget that.
No, and I think freelancing, it's especially freelance work or remote work, as you've been saying, is becoming, it's integrated into society, and I don't really see it going away anytime soon. I think millennials or Gen Z love the fact that they can do a million different jobs. People want a side hustle.
Yeah. And listen, maybe you have a full-time 9-to-5 job where you go into the office, and there's benefits to that, right? Like, there's a social element to it. It's being locked up in a room all day isn't for everyone. That's why I like the WeWork kind of thing, because I get to meet a lot of great people. But like what you do outside of that, you know, that's like perfect fit for like a remote opportunity. And we're seeing this shift towards people who have a 9-to-5 job, you know, or you work 40, 50 hours a week, and they have these passion projects on the side, and they're working on startups with friends, or they're helping out their startups on certain kind of, you know, taking some of their expertise to help these earlier stage companies. And I think that's a really exciting trend, and it helps give people that do what they're passionate about and work on projects that really give them purpose and gratification. And this is kind of what we're seeing with like the quiet quitting phenomena. But if you kind of look beneath what's happening there is like this ability to do things remotely, or this kind of like is leading to a much better awareness of like work-life balance. For me, so much of my life is my work, and my work is my life. But it's because it's a startup that I get to shape, and I have so much control over what I do. And when you're a freelancer, you have a certain level of creative control also. In terms of the projects you choose, in terms of how you approach them as well. And I think that's what people crave.
As a co-founder, how do you manage that work-life balance when it really is like your passion project come to life and it's something you're all in touch with every single day? Because it's something I struggle with. Work-life balance is so difficult.
I think that when you're just getting started, there is no work-life balance, and I don't think there can be. Like, you're sprinting. I think that after you cross after you break through a certain number of walls, though, you need to figure out how to maintain your energy for the long run. So once you kind of like go through your first couple of cycles, and for me, I uncovered coming out of the pandemic was like, all right, I need to be energized every day I need to show up on time every day. I need to be cool, calm, collected, confident for my team every day, no exceptions. And in order to show up in that way, you need to find other ways to recharge you. And I definitely get energy from, you know, success stories with our product, but I also get energy from spending time with my family. I get energy from spending time with friends. I get energy from getting enough sleep. And if you don't make the time to do the things that give you energy, you don't do good work. It's a challenging thing, and you need to start drawing a little bit of boundaries. We started working a little bit more closely with like a 9-to-5 structure. We introduced vacation days last year. We had unlimited vacation, quote unquote, and we didn't observe any holidays. Mm. So it was like, oh, this is like, it's like July 4th on Monday. Like, are we taking it off? You know? And it was always like that question for the first couple of years. Like, no, like we would like work every day on the weekends too. And at a certain point I was like, okay, no. So I think it's learning how to prioritize yourself. And I did a trip through the National Outdoor Leadership School when I was in college. I did 6 weeks in the Arctic Circle of Alaska with 9 strangers.
Wow.
We trekked 500 miles and encountered 7 grizzly bears. And you learn a lot. Like the whole purpose of the trip is to learn about like leadership. And there's a couple different kinds of leadership. There's designated leadership, like, hey, you're the CEO, but there's active followership. The one that I have found the most important for me is self-leadership. When you wake up in the morning, before you go to the kitchen and make food for, like, before you take care of everyone else, you need to get your stuff in order. Getting up on time in the morning and like taking care of yourself, because if you don't do those things, then you actually become a burden for the rest of the expedition. And it's really hard also for you to take care of the expedition if you're not taking care of yourself.
We'll be right back. Going back to the WeWork space, because I find that a really interesting concept. Does it always help to be around other companies and other creatives, or is it also quite daunting because the space of startups and new businesses is so competitive?
It depends on the day. Depends on the
depends
day.
Depends on how much sleep you've
depends
had.
Depends how much sleep I had, how good the coffee was. I get energy from it. I think that, I'll give you some examples. Like, we've been doing some soul searching recently. And, you know, we've had a lot of success, and we're just trying to think about how do we position ourselves for the next 10 years? And, you know, we were like, oh, this is what we started building, still the same thing that the world needs. Because the world has changed so dramatically, and the market changes every week, every month, and especially with what's happening in the economy right now. It's like, how do we tweak what we're doing? And I was out in, actually, I was on SF the other week. I realized that a lot of, pretty much every other startup has had a similar moment, tweaking what they're doing. Being around other founders validated my feelings and made me realize that I wasn't crazy, because sometimes, like, if you're working on a startup and you're not around anybody else who's doing startups, like, they don't get it. So being around other founders who are like also doing that crazy thing, it helps you realize that, like, maybe you're not so crazy, or maybe you're just all crazy together, but it's like cool to hang out with other crazy people. So that's energizing. I think the downsides of spending too much time with other people who are doing similar things is it becomes very easy to compare yourself.
Of course.
So like it was validating realizing like, okay, I'm not the only one who's like maybe having a little bit of a crisis right now or struggling in this way. But like sometimes you see other people and like the success that they're projecting and the progress they're making, and it's hard not to like devalue yourself or feel like, I'm not good enough. And it's so easy to compare yourself. And I think people do this in any kind of industry, in any kind of situation. And I think sometimes it's good just to kind of put your blinders on, but it's also important not to compare yourself to others always. It's not a good reason to like not be around other people. It's, if anything, it's inspiring, right?
Definitely.
It's like they figured it out, they could do it. What could I learn from them? How could I improve? And I think that's the mindset you need to have as a founder. You can't really afford to have any moment of like really feeling dejection, even if you feel it. You need to like convince yourself that you're gonna figure it out.
Definitely.
You need to solve it. And learning from other founders has been one of the most impactful ways that we've done exactly that. And everyone has their own path, everyone has their own journey, everyone has their own timeline. There is no like deadline. I think that's important. I also think sometimes it can be distracting. So like in a super pragmatic way, you just need to figure out how to like be in those spaces. And kind of really lock in and do what needs to be done.
Well, I was going to say, it's interesting that you have that mindset to like harness, kind of, like you say, not to let that dejection face you. Well, Mark Zuckerberg created Facebook in his dorm room. Why can't I? And I think it's a good mentality to have. That's the only way you're going to battle through everyone else's companies.
Right. It's you need to learn, and you need to have like a growth mindset. And when I say growth mindset, it's like, are you learning? And if you're learning, you're doing great. Well, are you learning, and are you adapting, and are you innovating? I think it's one of the challenges of being a founder too, is like, to what extent do you hold on to the initial vision of what you were starting versus like remain adaptable and listen and like listen if the market is telling you it's like not quite there. And this is like the search for product market fit. It's like, to what extent do you keep whacking the market over the head with the same product and hope that like eventually you'll smash a square peg into a round hole, and like if you just hit it hard enough and enough times, like it'll work.
Mm.
I've met founders who just have incredible visions and incredible understanding of the market, and they understand the problem super, super well, and their initial hypothesis is correct. And like the initial product they build, it just works and it takes off, and that's great. But that is like 1% of startup stories, and only a fraction of startup successes in general. A lot of successful companies have gone through a ton of innovation and iteration and change. And think about those moments where it wasn't quite working. And those are where it's easy to feel dejection, and where being resilient and persistent is critical. And you can't afford to not believe in yourself, because everyone around you is doubting you, investors, your family, your friends, the non-startup folks, the other startup folks. Like, no one really believes you can pull it off. And sometimes that creeps into yourself. But as soon as you let that in and like take hold, game's over, right? So even in those moments where like you don't believe in yourself, you need to like ignore it and be, I'm going to believe in myself anyway, and believe we're going to figure it out. And I think what I try to do then is like get solution oriented and like, okay, so it's not working, what can we change? Trying to sell and like convince people all the time is exhausting.
Of course.
And when you have true product market fit, I think the opposite thing happens, where like people come to you and they love what you're building and it grows. So I try to focus more on like what's in my control and what's out of it.
Mm.
And like an investor passing on us, out of my control. What's in my control is adjusting my pitch, having more conversations, you know, not giving up. Those are the things that I can control. So that's what I choose to focus on.
A very active approach. So we've spoken about how you've gotten here. What is the long-term goal for Pangea.app? What is, or for you as a founder, like, where do you see yourself in the next 5-10 years?
I want people to spend their time and do the things that they're passionate about. And I want people to work on projects that have a real impact. And I want people to feel like they have an impact and have a say at the table. So everything we're doing with Pangea is really to connect great talent with great opportunities, where for us, what we think a great opportunity is not only one that, yeah, pays you, but it's a cool company working on a cool mission that really values you and you could really use your help. That's going to give you a seat at the table, and it's going to give you an opportunity to really like move the needle for them from zero to one. And I think freelancing is this incredible kind of gateway to enable those types of engagements. And I want more people to understand the power of that and be able to harness it and not make it such a daunting, scary thing.
I feel like New York for you doesn't, I might be wrong in saying this, but it doesn't seem a necessity. I feel like you've harnessed the remote platform and it seems to be a thing that's running and working for you guys. And I feel like if remote work is such a big part of your app identity, does the city ever come into play?
Well, I think you can work remotely in the city. And then I can work remotely from Boston and San Francisco and LA.
And do you think these locations will inspire different parts of the app?
Absolutely.
In what way?
So like Boston's a very academic town, and you meet a lot of founders in Boston that are working on like very health tech or AI or ML, like really interesting, or like ed tech kind of stuff. It's really inspiring kind of talking to those types of founders. It's a great town. I love Rhode Island. It definitely is like a social impact environment. A lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of accelerators that focus on that up there. New York just has a hustle to it, right? It has an encouragement, and it's a place where you go and you're like, I can dream big.
Yeah.
You know?
I love to dream.
You love to dream. It's inspiring, and that kind of exposure I think is really helpful. I was out in SF the other week, and also a great environment. I don't think I'll live there, but so many people work in tech. Like every ad you see is like a startup. So you realize like you see more of like the startup success. In New York, it's a bit more of like, it's weird to think of like New York as like an emerging tech ecosystem. I mean, it's, but like compared to SF, it definitely is not as robust, but it's cool. It would be cool to play a part in that, and riding that wave. And in Rhode Island, it's been really great kind of getting that wave started and being a part of like that initial cohort. And
yeah,
I'm a New Yorker born and raised, but like I'm a New Englander at heart.
Yeah. Do you think that's the hesitancy then to move to the city because you think all these different places inspire different elements and bring different things to the table?
I've resisted the gravitational pull of New York for quite some time because I was always nervous that if I moved here, I would kind of like get locked in here. There's so much to do, right? It's like everything you need
on tap 24/7,
whenever you want it, right? And I like the feeling of being able to travel. I've resisted it for some time. We'll see how much longer I can resist it. Because I feel like I've also grown a lot in Rhode Island, and part of me wants to continue to grow. And I just want to continue putting myself in environments where I feel like I'm growing and learning.
Do you think there'll be like a traveler element then to the company? If you move to New York, it won't be like a long-term thing?
Depends. Depends on what happens personally also.
Of course. There's loads of factors that go into it, but also I feel like, I mean, what I've done is throw myself into the middle of a brand new city and you just kind of see what comes of it.
That's what I love the most. It might be fun to try that, the full digital nomad thing, for a little while, because like, again, we have people who use our product that like they live that lifestyle. But I think New York's an incredible city. I've met incredible people here. It has an incredibly diverse ecosystem and amazing people with amazing perspectives, and that's what inspires me, right? And that kind of like getting to know so many different people from different walks of life is, I think, super important.
Absolutely. And I think the way you can be in such close proximity with all of them in the city, you bump into how many hundreds of people a day, you're meeting so many different walks of life. And I think that's got to be so inspiring.
The collisions.
Right?
Right. It's like the primordial soup of like all the little amino acids, like swimming around a little pool, and it's just like lightning strikes in New York.
I think so too. And I feel like you've given us so much advice and kind of inspirational mottos and tips to take away from today. But what is one piece of advice that you would tell your younger self?
Get comfortable with making trade-offs. There's a natural limit in terms of how you can spend your time and where you can be. Like the space-time exists, and we have not yet figured out how to transcend that. And I find myself facing this often, where you're presented with like three options of like, you can do this thing, or this thing. And they're all on the same day at the same time. And you have to pick one. And there's an element to each of them that you want to do, but you literally can't do all of them. And I think that for a long time when I was young, I avoided those. Like I tried to do everything and I spread myself super, super thin, and then like didn't do a good job at doing all three of those things or wasn't super present. So I've been working on getting comfortable making those kinds of decisions and realizing that most decisions are tough. So get comfortable with trade-offs, get comfortable with like applying a framework for it. Know you can't please everybody all the time,
which is I think a really hard thing to kind of digest for yourself.
Absolutely. And I'm a people pleaser,
like me too, chronically.
But like the best thing you can do is just be honest, be communicative, and just focus on being a good person. That to me is like end of the day, regardless what happens in my life in terms of like professional success, like if I can be proud of the person that I am and the way that I interact with people, that's a life well lived.
And on that note, thank you so much for coming on and for your words of wisdom. I feel like it's been so inspiring, not even just as a co-founder, but also as a young person growing up in the working world. So thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure.
And that brings us to the end of the first episode. Thank you so much to Adam for joining me and for kicking off this storybook of self-starter tales. And if you're looking for more Urban Tales content, you can catch new episodes every Tuesday at 2 p.m. on WFUVnews.org, Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. See you next time.